this week on the College Football Roundup. Vanderbilt takes down the Tigers. Stanford overcomes Florida State. Michigan gets back on track and so much more. This is the Monday Report, starting now. All right. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, October 20th, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we've got one packed show for you, so let's just jump right into it. Starting us off, LSU lost to Vanderbilt. Vandy got another historic win. I'm pretty sure this was the first time they've beaten an SEC team while favored to beat that SEC team in, like, decades. I saw that somewhere. I'm pretty sure that's accurate, but I'm not into the whole betting thing, so we're just going to roll with it. Either way, they beat the LSU Tigers 31-24. This is a huge, even if that stat I cited isn't true, this is still a huge moment for Clark Lee and the Vanderbilt Commodores. It's just, think of it this way. Vanderbilt has more wins against top 10 opponents this season than James Franklin ever did at Penn State in 12 seasons. That's all you need to know. This season for Vanderbilt is unlike anything I have seen ever. Vanderbilt is 6-1 for the first time since like 1950. They're doing things that haven't been done since most of the current head coaches in college football have been alive. You know, just to put things in some perspective here, that's how special this Vanderbilt team is right now. And Diego Pavia, his stats weren't impressive. He went 14 of 22 for 160 yards and a touchdown through the air. That's not great. The thing is, he also had 17 carries for 86 yards and two touchdowns. And that is what made him special. The fact that he can do both at such an incredibly effective clip makes him someone you have to account for. And Vanderbilt, they use his skill set so well. They play such complimentary football. I'm surprised he's able to stay healthy getting like 17 carries a game. But more power to you, I guess. Either way, LSU, on the other hand, Garrett Nussmeier went 19 of 28 for 225 yards and two touchdowns. He was sacked twice for negative 13 yards. Yeah, maybe this is the Michigan football in me, where it's like, you don't need the quarterback to be Superman, but like, 225 and two touchdowns should be enough from the quarterback to get you over the hump in most games. Now, in order for that to work, the running game has to do more than 21 carries for 100 yards and no touchdowns. Oh, and half of that 100 yards came on one carry by Caden Durham. Yeah. So, if you're LSU, you got to get more out of your run game. And that's been a thing all year. That's just, LSU can't run the ball well. They can't pass block well. The wide receivers and the QB really aren't on the same page. But even still, getting 225 and two touchdowns from your QB, that should be enough. Now, you do need to run the ball more. And you need to run the ball for probably 150 yards a game if you're going to do 225 through the air. Now, if you're just saying, yeah, 100 yards is that's what we're getting, and that's what we want to get, that's whatever, then yeah, Garrett Nussmeier needs to get you probably 280 minimum and three touchdowns. But if you're playing complimentary football, you should be able to do 225 and two touchdowns through the air and win a game. You should be able to do that. You shouldn't have to have your quarterback go Super Saiyan and, like, throw for 350 yards and four touchdowns. You shouldn't need that from QB. QB should be, his job should be to manage the offense, keep everything on track, make sure there's no crazy mistakes happen, and take care of the football. And let the run game and the flow of the game just kind of take over. You shouldn't need your QB to be Hercules, slaying demons and slaying dragons single-handedly. You shouldn't need that from Garrett Nussmeier. And the thing is, you shouldn't expect that from Garrett Nussmeier. Garrett Nussmeier is a game manager. He's the kind of QB who goes to a team with a good defense and a solid run game and throws for 225 and two touchdowns and wins all the time. That's the kind of QB he should be. And the fact that Brian Kelly cannot put an offense around him that can mask some of his deficiencies, quote-unquote, look, this is his stat line per game. Going back for the whole season, 232, one touchdown, 237, one touchdown, 220 and one touchdown, 273 and three touchdowns against some FCS team, 197 yards, one touchdown, 254 and two touchdowns, 225 and two touchdowns. If that's what you're going to be, then you have to be able to run the ball. If that's the QB, and that's what he is. He's a 66% completion kind of guy, 230-ish per game. That's what you're getting from him. So you have to run the ball more, which falls on the offensive coordinator, the O-line, the running backs. It is what it is. But they should be able to run the ball better than this at LSU. They just should. They're too talented. They recruit too well. Now, a lot of LSU fans are going to start having conversations of, is Brian Kelly the right fit? Should we fire him? And if they're not having those conversations, then they're just saying, it's time for Brian Kelly to leave. It's time to fire this bum because he's had four seasons and this, and it's not enough. We had a Heisman Trophy winner and it wasn't enough. And here's what I say to those people. You're stupid and you should feel bad about being stupid. Brian Kelly is a great head coach. He was able to win games at Notre Dame. Notre Dame. And that's Notre Dame before the transfer portal. Before they could get guys to come without having to like recruit them out of high school and the whole academics thing. It's actually easier to win at Notre Dame now than it used to be. Back when Kelly was at Notre Dame, you had to do it through brute force of milking every drop of talent out of some really smart white boy from New Jersey. Because Lord knows you ain't getting those wide receivers from down south who have a 2.4 GPA. You had to get the smart dudes. You don't have to do that at Notre Dame anymore. So the fact that Brian Kelly was able to win games and go to BCS Bowls and go to a national championship game, which he lost, granted he lost, but the fact that he was able to drag Notre Dame kicking and screaming into those games tells you that he is the right coach at LSU. Now, yeah, it ain't working with Garrett Nussmeier. And okay, it ain't working with Garrett Nussmeier. But this is not the time to dump Brian Kelly. The defense was awful, so he made changes. Now their defense is pretty damn good. Okay, this offseason, maybe you do ditch the offensive coordinator, the wide receivers coach, the running backs coach, O-line coach, all. Maybe you dump the offensive staff and retool a little bit. Get a new QB out of the portal. Hell, maybe DJ Lagway, because Florida fired Billy Napier yesterday. Well, today. Sunday. Today. I record this on Sunday. Either way, LSU has room to maneuver with Brian Kelly still. Their fans, I know it's frustrating. Trust me, I grew up in the Rich Rodriguez, Brady Hoke era of Michigan football. I know exactly what it's like having a team that you know should be better than it is and isn't, and continually disappoints you to where you get laughed at by your friends who are all fans of your rival team. Yeah, I've been there. Hold steady with Brian Kelly. This is not the time to fire him. It's not the time to run his ass out of town, because I promise you, if you run Brian Kelly out of town, you will not make the playoffs for another 5 years. You just won't. Because who are you going to get? Brian Kelly is a solid coach. You're going to get James Franklin? You're going to get Mr. 10-2 short of the mark? No. You're going to get Matt Rhule? Matt Campbell? You're going to get Alex Golesh from the G4? The G5? You're going to get Jeff Traylor? Who are you going to get at LSU who's going to be better than Brian Kelly? Who's a solid coach? You ain't getting Urban Meyer. You ain't getting Nick Saban. You sure as shit ain't getting Lane Kiffin. Hell, I don't even know if Florida's getting Lane Kiffin. So yeah, stick with Brian Kelly. It's not time to fire him. It's not time to have this conversation. Yes, this season is disappointing. This is not the time to be blowing everything up when you have a talented roster and you're right there. Make some changes to the staff. Reevaluate the quarterback room. This is not the time to blow everything up. And it should be mentioned, there is every possibility that the long-term plan at QB for LSU was Bryce Underwood. Because they were offering him $1 bazillion to go to LSU. And as a guy who's watching Bryce Underwood play every week, the dude is the real deal. He'd probably be starting for LSU right now. So you might have to take into account that this season, LSU got kind of caught napping at the QB position. Hold course. Take a deep breath. It's not time to blow everything up. And circling back to Vanderbilt, you better offer Clark Lee $1 gazillion. Because I guarantee you, if Clemson blows it up, or Florida State, I'm recording this at 7:30 on Sunday. Florida State still has a head coach. Mike Norvell hasn't been fired yet. I hope they don't fire him, because I like Mike Norvell. I think he can do, as we saw in 2023, he can get Florida State to those towering highs. This just isn't the year. Things are kind of bad. But regardless, they might fire him. They might not. All right. Yeah, anyway, let's move on. Florida State. Yeah. We're moving on. Just moving on to Florida State. They lost to Stanford. Yeah. It's bad. It's bad in Tallahassee. They lost 20-13 to a really bad Stanford team. This Stanford team has an interim head coach, Frank Reich. Yeah, that Frank Reich. The Frank Reich from the NFL, Frank Reich, who is coaching the team on an interim basis as a favor to Stanford general manager Andrew Luck. And yes, that Andrew Luck. NFL QB, former Heisman runner-up, Stanford QB Andrew Luck. He's the GM at Stanford now. So Frank Reich is running the team, and they're like 3-4 now, I guess. They're okay. They're not okay. They're bad. They don't have a quarterback. They can't really. Their offense is a steaming pile of disaster. But they beat Florida State, who has now lost 4 conference games in a row. It's bad. So Florida State went 3-and-out 4 times, and they turned the ball over twice on downs in the fourth quarter alone. Yeah, 3-and-outs throughout the game, but 2 turnovers on downs in the fourth quarter. Man, for one of those turnover on downs, you're on the Stanford 14-yard line, kick a damn field goal. Just kick a field goal. You're down 20-16. And you get a little bit more room to maneuver. But that offense, they had like 300 plus passing yards. And they got 13 points. It's one of these things where something just ain't right at Florida State. I don't want to see him get fired. I like Mike Norvell. As I just said, I like him. I think he can get you there if you're a Florida State fan. But something is very wrong in Tallahassee. Like, they are more talented than this. They had a good portal class. They had a good recruiting class. This team has good players. They beat Bama. They beat Bama. And yet they're just falling apart. And you know what? Maybe this is a sign that Mike Norvell needs to go. Maybe that's what this is. Maybe the team just has no mental toughness. Excuse me, I had to take a drink of water. Maybe that's what's going on at Florida State. Either way, they're just flailing. I don't know how else to say it. They're just flailing. They should be better than this. They should have beaten this Stanford team. This Stanford team is bad. They should have beat them. That Virginia team, in hindsight, is pretty good. But they shouldn't be 3-4 through 7 games. It just blows my mind. So they might fire him. I hope they don't. Now, this is the 4th straight loss for Mike Norvell. Before the Mike Norvell era, the last 4-game losing streak at Florida State was in 1975. Mike Norvell has four-game losing streaks in his, like, 5 years at Florida State. So that's bad. But I still don't think they should fire him. I like Mike Norvell. Moving on from Florida State, we got to talk about the Michigan Wolverines. Michigan imposed their will on Washington late as the Huskies collapsed in the fourth quarter to lose 24-7 in Ann Arbor. Michigan's defense dominated. They had three picks, and there could have been a fourth one. And that fourth one I mentioned should have been a pick six, but Jair Hill was looking to run before he even caught the thing and he dropped it. Michigan also had two sacks, one of which was a strip sack. Now, Washington landed on the fumble, but it was still a turnover on downs. It was on a fourth down. Boy, that was the best game Michigan has played all season. I know they won like 60 gazillion to whatever against Central. I know. This was the most complete game Michigan has played all year. The tackling wasn't great, but it was better. The pass rush was better than it's been. I thought the linebackers played really well, even though we lost Ernest Hausman in the second half. They still played well. Cole Sullivan is a bona fide stud. Got his third interception of the season. I thought Wink called a pretty good game. They stopped going to a 5-3, it's our 5-2 kind of bear front every time a team went with two tight ends. They stopped doing that, stopped blitzing all the time, and played more coverage. And lo and behold, they were able to keep Damond Williams Jr. in the pocket. They were able to really contain his running ability. Yes, there were a couple of big chunk pass plays, but ultimately they kept him to 209 yards passing with three interceptions. And they held Washington, which is one of the best offenses in the country, to 40 yards rushing. 4-0. Yeah, it was a good performance from the Michigan defense. On the Michigan offensive side, it was a slow start. Game was 7-7 at halftime. But Bryce Underwood played by far his best game as a Michigan quarterback. He went 21 of 27 for 230 yards passing and two passing touchdowns. He also had 25 yards rushing on the ground. And he was only sacked once. Excuse me. Bryce Underwood, we are seeing him growing into the quarterback position before our very eyes. Now, initially, I went to the game. It was at home. I went to the game. Initially, I thought the touchdown he threw to Andrew Marsh, I thought that was kind of a levels concept with like a drag route to get Marsh open in the middle of the field. But upon reviewing the tape, it was actually an incredibly well-executed screen pass. It's amazing how little you can see from the stands when it's on the opposite end zone. Either way, it was a perfectly executed screen. The offensive lineman got out in space. Andrew Marsh caught the ball, followed his blockers, ran it in for a touchdown. It was well. But there was another throw in the game where, and you know what? It probably looks like a nothing play. But Underwood, it was like a play action. And a play action with the fake going to the right. I think it was a play action. Either way, Underwood like does the play fake, and he goes to his first read, which is McCauley, second read, which I'm pretty sure was Samaj Morgan, and then he checks it down to Jordan Marshall on the sideline, who ran for like 5 yards. Whatever. That play doesn't seem anything special. He went through his reads, he managed the pocket, he went all the way to his check down, threw a catchable ball to his running back, allowing his running back to make a play. That is excellent quarterback play. Those are what we call the little things. You know, it's about doing the little things well. And Bryce Underwood did the little things well today. Well, Saturday. Now, there were some things. He did have a couple of throws. We were like, bro, that's a little rushed. Maybe don't put that much zip on that. Or, hey, that's a little too quickly. Maybe you shouldn't short arm that. Or, hey, maybe don't throw that one off your back foot. Now, the ball was brilliant. But Bryce Underwood did throw a, like, 25-yard throw to Zach Marshall over the head of two defenders off of his back foot. And yes, the pass rush was coming, I know, but you cannot throw a ball like that across the field, like, 25 yards off your back foot, because you're going to get intercepted. Now, admittedly, it worked out. It was an incredible throw, an incredible catch, and it was a huge play, but you'd like to see him clean that up a little bit. But ultimately, I thought Bryce Underwood played a great game. He didn't really have any ball. He had one. No, he didn't. McCauley threw that ball. Bryce Underwood didn't have any throws where you're like, ooh, why would you put that in danger? He didn't have any of those. McCauley had one of those, which Donovan, you were a quarterback at Indiana once upon a time. You got to know not to throw a ball into triple coverage. But I digress. Samaj Morgan. He did have at least one, but it might have been two more drops, one of which was a perfectly thrown ball to the outside on a fourth and short that he just dropped it. He could have taken that bad boy like 15 yards. Instead, he dropped it. I know I've been harping on Samaj Morgan a lot this season, but at this point, you might just have to say, we're just going to not play him on offense. Because he drops the ball every game. I'm pretty sure there has not been a single game where he hasn't dropped the ball this year. You can't do that. It was a fourth and short in the first half. Michigan needed that. Michigan absolutely needed that. That was a gotta-have-it play. To really get a huge lead, maybe to get into field goal range, put together a good drive that could really help put this game away when you're up like when you're tied 7-7. Instead, it was a turnover on downs and kind of a loss of momentum kind of play. It just Samaj Morgan, he made a great play as a true freshman, and since then he hasn't really done anything. And this year he is just horrible at catching the ball. So I think it's time for him to ride the pine. He can be the punt returner if they want him to be the punt returner. But man, oh man, it's time for him to ride the pine, because I am so tired of watching him drop really catchable balls that could have gone for serious yardage. When you're given those opportunities, you got to execute. Because I didn't know if you noticed, but Donovan McCauley, Zach Marshall, and especially Andrew Marsh have arrived in the passing game. Michigan was out Hogan Hansen and Marlon Klein at tight end. And instead, they went with a guy named Zach Marshall, true freshman. I think he's a true freshman, or he's a young guy, or a true freshman, or a redshirt freshman. And a guy, I think his name is either Tortellini or Tonelli. I think it's Tonelli or Torini or something like that, but I'm pretty sure it's Tonelli. I've never heard of him, tight end. Guy, I'm like, who is that? Number 88. He had a good game. Michigan's pass catchers are finally starting to round into form. Andrew Marsh is a bona fide stud. He made a catch one-handed. Oh my God. So like, Bryce Underwood is running to the left, and he throws back across his body in a really weird way, back behind the corner to Andrew Marsh, who catches it one-handed while spinning backwards. It was incredible. It's like, good Lord, this kid's a true freshman. What's he going to do when he's a sophomore or a junior? Or, God forbid, a senior? It was crazy. It was a crazy catch. So, Andrew Marsh has arrived. Zach Marshall, stud watch. Donovan McCauley, solid as ever. Samaj, your opportunities are going to start getting kind of thin, because if Michigan can trust Zach Marshall and Tonelli to be consistent tight end pass catchers, and you've got Marsh and you've got McCauley, and you can trust Justice Haynes and Jordan Marshall to catch balls out of the backfield, where does that leave Samaj Morgan? I'm just saying. All right, the next segment we're going to go to is what I'm calling quick hits. Just quick little blurbs on some other games that happened. So Texas A&M survived Arkansas to get to 7-0. The score was 45-42. This Texas A&M team is real good, but that Arkansas offense is starting to get better now that Bobby Petrino has taken over the offense and fired some people and moved some pieces around. So that was that Arkansas team. They're kind of sneaky spooky, but definitely a scare for Texas A&M. All right, Texas barely escaped Kentucky in overtime, winning with a score of 16-13. My biggest takeaway from this game is Texas is not great, and Kentucky is even worse. Now, for Kentucky, I didn't realize this. Did you know that since their offensive coordinator was hired like 3 or 4 years ago, I think it's 3 or 4 years ago, Kentucky has not scored more than 2 touchdowns in a single game? Think about that. This Kentucky offense is a crime against humanity. But at the same time, in overtime, they had a 4th and inches, and they went for it. And more often than not, their coach would have just kicked the field goal, played the conservative play. But he went for it on 4th and inches, and I don't want Kentucky fans blaming him for that. It was the right call. I fully supported the play, and even the play call was fine. It's just that, for that one play, Texas was better. And they blew it up and stopped you short. And then they played a couple of plays and kicked the field goal and won the game. But if you're Kentucky, you live and die with that play, because that play was the right call at the right time. That was the time to be aggressive. It's like, you know what? I can't take this aggression with me. You know, I can't save it for later. It's now or never. And especially for a coach, I think their coach might be on the way out, because Kentucky, their fans are getting tired of being mid. So for Kentucky, that was the right call. It just didn't work out for them. All right, Texas Tech. Oh my God, number 7 Texas Tech lost to unranked Arizona State 26-22. At one point, this game was 19-7. I got home from the game. We went to Ann Arbor after the game. I got home to watch this game like, what the hell is going on? And Texas Tech made a kind of a comeback, but at the same time, it's Arizona State. They're not great. They're not horrible, but you're undefeated Texas Tech. You should be better than this. And they weren't. And they lost. It was a game that felt like Arizona State just kind of controlled from the beginning, and they played their game, and Texas Tech was just playing catch up the whole time. And if you can't impose your will on an inferior opponent, then you're not going to win anything. You're especially not going to be a good playoff team. So that was, look alive, Penn State, because that's danger. Not Penn State. Gosh, Penn State. I've just been thinking of Penn State all week. Look alive, Texas Tech, because that was dangerous. But, yeah, we're actually not going to be talking about Penn State starting now. No more Penn State today. UCLA continues their Cinderella run. Gosh, my brain today. Good Lord. Cinderella run. Yeah, they defeated Maryland 20-17, and they were behind in this game. So, at one point, their QB, Nico Iamaleava, had to be taken off the field from an injury, but they got the win. And, man, oh, man, this UCLA team, they play Indiana. If they beat Indiana, they've won 3 games in a row. They still control their destiny to get to the playoffs. All UCLA has to do is win out, because they'd be playing Indiana and Ohio State. All they got to do is win out, and they go to the playoffs, which blows my mind. But they're playing Indiana at Indiana next week. If they win that game, then we have to start taking them really seriously, because their offense is for real. Jerry Neuheisel, he's got that offense clicking. Now, on the Maryland side, the only thing that's keeping Mike Locksley employed right now is the fact that he's got a big buyout. Maryland has been disappointing. Now that Talia Tagovailoa is gone, they're just eh. So, it's disappointing from Maryland. I expected them to be better. I always expect them to be better. And then they're okay through September. And like always with Mike Locksley, they fall off in October and they're downright dreadful in November. So, you know, it's the same old, same old. Same story, different day. Alright, next week, here are 3 games to look forward to next week. Michigan is taking on Michigan State in East Lansing for the Paul Bunyan Trophy. Jonathan Smith might be playing for his job, because the week after that is Michigan State's bye week, and if there was ever a time to fire a head coach, it's then. So Jonathan Smith desperately needs a victory over Michigan if he wants to keep his job. Michigan is looking to continue building their momentum as they enter the stretch run. My prediction for this game is 27-16. I know a lot of Michigan fans are going to be wishing for more than that, but as we've seen in previous years, you know, it's cliche to say throw out the records, but as Michigan proved last year when they beat the Buckeyes, throw out the records. It's a rivalry game. Anything can happen. So I expect Michigan State's team to be scratching and clawing and doing absolutely everything they can to try to get their coach another win to keep him so that he can stay on the job, because by all accounts, Jonathan Smith is a nice guy, but it just seems uninspired. He seems checked out at Michigan State. I mean, they got absolutely blasted by UCLA in East Lansing last week. Like, holy crap, it was a massacre. Stop, they're already dead kind of stuff. So, yeah, I'm predicting that Michigan's going to win 27-16. All right, next game we've got, let me just check the rankings, because when I wrote this rankings, the AP poll hadn't come out yet. So let me just check on that real quick, because I don't want you to give you the old rankings. So Ole Miss is taking on, God, not in the week 10. Ole Miss is number 8 in the country, and Oklahoma is number 13. Ole Miss is going to Oklahoma, and that's going to be an awesome game. You got John Mateer. The Lane train just keeps on going. Ole Miss is going to look to bounce back after a disappointment against Georgia. Oklahoma is going to hope to keep the train rolling now that John Mateer is back in action. Their last game was so-so. They won. But in my opinion, it wasn't super impressive. It wasn't super reassuring. I'd still like to see this Oklahoma team pummel a conference opponent, but they just kind of haven't yet. Either way, my prediction is 31-27 Ole Miss. So, yeah, I think the Rebels are going to pull one out in Norman. And then for my last game to watch for next week, we've got number 3 Texas A&M taking on number 20 LSU in Death Valley. Can Brian Kelly right the ship? Simple as that. Can Brian Kelly get a massive upset win, right the ship, get the vibes back, and just kind of keep on trucking? Or is Mike Elko going to establish the Aggies as the king of the SEC? They are 7-0, and they've got one heck of an offensive line. They've got one heck of a defense. They got a QB who's pretty efficient. I am predicting a 24-20 win for Texas A&M. 8-0 Texas A&M. Did not have that one on my bingo card during the preseason, but here we are. That is a very distinct possibility. All right, next week we're going to continue our college football roundup. For those of you listening on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else that podcasts are available, Thank you. Please leave a like or rate the podcast if you can. Spread the word so we can help this thing grow. For those of you watching on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, hit the bell icon to get notifications, and please leave a comment. It helps with the algorithm. We're slowly, and by that I mean glacially slowly, kind of building things on the YouTube side. I'm kicking around the idea of breaking up these episodes into smaller videos as well, like releasing each segment individually on the YouTube channel as well. Let me know if you want me to do that. It'll be a ton of work for me, but I can do that if there's demand on the YouTube side. So, either way, my name is H. James K. Thank y'all for tuning in. Until next time.